Coming to you from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny. Motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli. And today, for Monday Gun Day, I've got Mike Uli back in the studio. Of course, Mike is an attorney and a firearms instructor. And today, we're going to talk about Robert Hunter Biden in the case that he's got filed against him now in the United States District Court for the District of Delaware. And we're going to discuss the indictment that's pending there. It was filed September 14th. This episode is going to be released by the time you're listening to it, September 25th. So the indictment's had a little time to sort of circulate on the internet, but I'll certainly link to the indictment in the show notes. But first of all, Mike, welcome to the show.
Alex, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So there's been a sort of a mixed reaction to this indictment. I think most people have some sense of satisfaction about the indictment, but are nevertheless a little bit reluctant about it because I think most people think that the 4473 and the background check and most of the things that the government does related to firearms regulation are unconstitutional, including most of this indictment. But we're going to kind of walk through that and tell people a little bit about what is in the indictment and what's going on here. So I guess starting out, do you have any just thoughts and initial thoughts about the situation?
I guess maybe to start out, what I'm not really prepared to talk about. A lot of people look at this. You're going to see it all over the news. I think most of your listeners know where we stand with respect to attempted government regulation of firearms ownership and the Second Amendment. But I think what's interesting about this case is if you're a Democrat, they're crying, oh, selective prosecution. They're just picking on this guy, the president's son. There is some merit to the fact this is selective, I guess, maybe because they don't charge these crimes much. On the other hand, if you're a Republican, they're saying, oh, they discharged him with the gun crimes because now they're staying away from the corruption of the Biden family criminal syndicate or whatever. And they're right about that. The Republicans are. I don't know. But we're not going to talk about the politics of this. We're just going to try to stick to just the intricacies of the indictment here and what Hunter Biden has been charged with. And I wanted to talk about this because I think it's pretty – I use the term rich when I saw this, because for his entire career, Joe Biden, President Biden, has been pretty staunchly anti-government, anti-freedom.
Pro-government, anti-freedom.
Pro-government. Absolutely. Pro-government, anti-freedom. If you remember, he said he tries to equate the Second Amendment with hunting, as if the purpose of the Second Amendment is so we can all go hunting. And he always mentions, you know, you don't, quote, need an AR-15. You can go out on your – I don't remember what kind of lunacy he proposed with respect to defending your home, going out on your balcony or your deck and shooting a double-barrel shotgun in the air or some such – notion. But anyway, I just think it's ironic that Mr. Anti-Gun, Anti-Freedom President has a son, which you're going to find out in a little bit, is going to take the position, I think, as counsel has already alluded to this, is going to take the position that the statutes that he's charged under here are unconstitutional and not in accord with our Second Amendment. And these charges that he's facing are related to his purchase and possession of a revolver in October. Was it October of
2018?
So, but I think his defenses here are going to be defenses that we on the pro-freedom side would generally make, but the son of Mr. Anti-Freedom President is going to have to make it in this circumstance so that he can avoid the negative repercussions from this indictment.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because here the, as you already alluded to, it's United States of America versus Robert Hunter Biden. Well, what is the United States of America, or who is the United States of America on the other side of the V in this lawsuit? It's the Biden Department of Justice.
And Attorney General
Merrick Garland. So it'll be interesting to see this battle hash out in the court system. And like you said, it's ironic that, as Hunter Biden's counsel has already alluded to, that they are going to be attacking the constitutionality of part of 18 U.S.C. 922G, which is the statute, the federal statute that prescribes what people are prohibited from possessing a firearm.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to watch. I would say, ultimately, I didn't look at the statute, but I think President Biden ultimately can pardon his son for any conviction that he might suffer with respect to this particular matter, because it's pending in federal court. So these are federal statutes, and President Biden could ultimately pardon him, and he may. I'm not sure what'll happen with this indictment, but that's always a possibility. So I guess the bottom line is this may be just more entertainment ultimately, from my perspective, than anything.
And you mentioned too that there aren't very many of these cases. I have had one case where somebody was charged with this, although it was under Indiana state law, and many states have the same sort of statute that reflects the federal statute. But it was a federal offense, but also a state offense for the same action. So yeah. I've had one, and there are very, very few of these. But with that said, let's get into the indictment a little bit, Mike, if that's okay with you. I guess starting out, what is at issue here? And what is Hunter Biden being charged with?
Well, I think just to provide some context, and most of your listeners are going to know this, but one of the reasons we do this is to kind of help your listeners, I think, articulate it to other folks out there that don't necessarily listen to us. If they're not, they should. But anyway, keep in mind that when you go buy a firearm from a federal firearms licensed dealer, somebody that has a license and has gotten permission from the government to sell firearms, one of the things you have to do as a consumer is you have to fill out you mentioned it already, a Form 4473. In that Form 4473, you can Google it and look it up, and Alex may put it in the show notes here. It was recently amended. I say recently. It's probably a lot longer than I think, but it was recently amended, and there were some changes made to that, but you can Google that and look at it. But you've got to fill this thing out. You fill it out. You sign it at the bottom, certifying everything there is true and accurate and correct under the penalty of perjury, under the possibility that you could be charged if you're making misrepresentations on the form. And then the FBI looks at this, and it's essentially saying, "Mother, may I have a firearm?" And then the government may tell you that you can have a firearm, you can't have a firearm, or we don't know for sure. Wait a little while, and we'll let you know maybe. That's basically how this process works. In October of 2018 or 19?
2018,
Hunter Biden decided he was going to buy a firearm. It was a revolver in this instance. Alex will link to the indictment here. But one of the questions on the 4473, and by the way, once again, the government, this is a case where the government is prosecuting someone because they made a misrepresentation to the government on a form. And we all know the government and government agents, police, federal agents, they can lie to us ad infinitum. But if you make a misrepresentation to the government, you're indicted in federal court.
Just as a side note, we've talked about this in a previous episode, but think about what crimes are most zealously prosecuted. They're almost always the crimes against the government, and almost never the crimes against other individuals. The crimes that the government cares about the most are the crimes against the government, which shows you where their priorities are. It's with maintaining power and maintaining the system of government. But with that said,
And why this form is important to the government, the Biden administration. We recently had a podcast. The guidance from President Biden was, hey, ATF, get as close as you can to universal background checks. Okay. This is one way, this form 4473 is one way they indirectly get to registration, because these forms that consumers have to fill out when they purchase a firearm from an FFL are supposed to be retained by the FFL until the FFL is no longer in business or the FFL's licensed activities are discontinued. So basically, they have to keep them as long as they're in the business of selling firearms. Yeah. And then guess what? If they quit selling firearms, guess where those forms are supposed to go?
They're not destroyed, are they?
No, they're not destroyed. They go to the federal government.
Yeah.
So then the federal government has those records.
Yeah. Right. So I've got the 4473 pulled up in front of me here. And if you look at 21F, it asks, are you an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance? And that reflects the statute that I referenced earlier, 18 USC 922 G3. So that's the question that's really at issue here in this indictment against Hunter Biden, right?
Yep. And Hunter Biden answered no to that question, because if he'd answered yes to that question, he probably would have been denied the opportunity to purchase that weapon, unless there was some sort of mistake made at the FBI. So he answered no, when in fact the government alleges, and I understand there is some evidence in his, for instance, his autobiography. He admitted that he was addicted to controlled substance. I think crack cocaine. There may be some TV interviews or other things. But anyway, the government purportedly has solid evidence that he lied when he filled out that form 4473.
I don't know, Mike, maybe he felt emboldened because his father is the president, but I don't think I'd be admitting to crimes in an autobiography, especially if it were within the statute of limitations for that crime. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've got a couple of thoughts. Number one, you're not addicted to crack cocaine. And number two, Hunter Biden, based upon what I understand or what's reported in the press, he's been pretty bold in a lot of areas of his life.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't be.
Yeah. He's not exactly a sterling example of a good citizen. We'll say that.
Yeah, exactly. So perhaps when you're involved in peddling influence to the White House, the vice presidency, a little white lie on a 4473 isn't a big deal.
Seems pretty innocuous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, count one, there are three counts here, right? What are the three counts?
Well, basically count one and two are very, very similar. They're essentially allegations that Hunter Biden in count one, he lied on the form. The second count is that he lied to the FFL. So it was basically the same activity, but there are two different statutes. So he's been charged basically for lying on the form is what it amounts to.
Yeah. Yeah. So count one, it says he knowingly made a false and fictitious written statement intended and likely to deceive the dealer with respect to a fact material to the lawfulness of the sale of the firearm. So he lied to the dealer, count one. Count two, he knowingly made a false statement and representation to Company One, licensed under the provision of Chapter 44 with respect to information required by the United States Code to be kept by the FFL, certified on the Form 4473 that he was not an unlawful user or addicted to any stimulant, narcotic drug, etc. So he lied to the dealer, he lied on the form. That's count one. Count two, what's count three?
Yeah, and count one, I'll just mention it. It has a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison and a fine of $250,000. And then there's some other stipulations about supervised release and some kind of fees. Count two is 5 years of imprisonment and $250,000 and some other odds and ends. Count three is different in a little bit than the first two. And it's basically saying that he was a prohibited possessor because he was addicted to a controlled substance, what we understand is maybe crack cocaine, because he was addicted to that at the time that he possessed this revolver, which is the subject matter of this indictment. He was in fact a prohibited person, which is a felony, mm-hmm. because he knowingly possessed a firearm while he was addicted to a controlled substance.
Yeah. So, and this is a Colt Cobra 38 special revolver, which is not really that important, except that there are some allegations or reports I've heard. Of course, you've got to be careful about what you hear on the internet, that there are pictures of him with some other firearms as well. So I don't know if there are any other charges coming down the pipeline or not, but this is with respect to one firearm, and it was a Colt Cobra 38 Special revolver. So the other thing I wanted to mention too is that there's this question about materiality, and I think this is what it's coming down to for Hunter Biden's defense. It's that so the indictment says that he made a false and fictitious written statement intended and likely to deceive that dealer with respect to a fact material to the lawfulness of the sale of the firearm under the provisions of United States Code. So that material element, I think, is what partly anyway, what Hunter Biden's defense is going to hinge on is, and basically they're going to have to say that 18 USC 922 G3, the part he's being charged under here, was unconstitutional, and therefore the facts that he lied about were immaterial, or that they didn't matter, they weren't relevant for some reason because of the unconstitutionality of the statute.
Yeah, his defense, I would think his counsel will hone in on this concept of material. It's one of, we had a podcast the other day, we talked about the ATF, what was the word?
Totality of the circumstances.
Totality of the circumstances, another one of those phrases like material, where attorneys can parse words and split hairs. So I would expect that to be an issue with respect to this case. But also just the fact that, I mean, we got to get back to Bruin again. Once again, what's so rich and ironic about this case to me, first of all, I'll go back to real quickly. I think you mentioned it. These stories about him, I think these are his infamous laptop pictures. There are supposedly pictures out there of him having a semi-automatic. Those pictures and those allegations are not in this complaint at all, or in this indictment at all. This is count three, is about his possession. It's interesting. It's about his possession from October 12, 2018 through October 23rd, 2018, which on its face, this indictment, that seems strange. I guess he only possessed this revolver for about 11 days. Which seems sort of odd, and there's no explanation in the indictment about that. But if you follow the news, you have heard stories about this, a firearm ending up in a dumpster. So I wonder if that's what happened to this firearm. It's not in the indictment.
Yeah.
But anyway, get back to your question, I think. So one of the things that's going to be attacked here by his counsel is the fact that these statutes are simply unconstitutional, and they're going to rely upon Bruin, which we've talked about extensively. Yeah. And as folks know, that your listeners, Bruin is the most recent, well, I don't know if it's, yeah, it's the most recent case, I think I can say that, out of the Supreme Court about the Second Amendment. Very impactful. And basically what it did was say, listen, to judge whether a law that has an impact on the Second Amendment is going to be constitutional or not will have to be analyzed within the context of whether or not there is an analogous law that was in effect at the time of the adoption of the Second Amendment in 1791. If there was an analogous law that we can find by looking at the text, history, and traditions analysis, then the statute will stand.
Might stand
as a chance of standing as being legitimate. And I think in this case, Hunter Biden's going to have to go back, his counsel, and is going to say, listen, at the time of the founding, there were no prohibitions about people who were addicted to stimulants or controlled substances. Mm-hmm. And because those laws didn't exist at the time of the founding, these prohibitions, these statutes are not going to be constitutional.
Yeah. And whether or not you are happy to see that Hunter Biden was charged here or not, I think that we're hopeful anyway that something good comes out of this case. He may be the poster boy, the poster child for this challenging the constitutionality of this particular infringement on the right to keep and bear arms. You know, 18 USC 922G, I think, is full of provisions that are going to be challenged. And in Rahimi, the case, we'll do a separate episode about that case, but it's coming up for oral argument in November of this year. It's going to be the next Second Amendment case at the Supreme Court, and it deals with another provision of the same statute. So I think multiple provisions of this 18 USC 922 will be challenged in the coming years in light of Bruin, because like you said, Mike, if the proposed regulation or the existing regulation infringes or it implicates the plain language of the Second Amendment, the government has to show an analogous regulation that existed at the time of the founding that would be supported then by the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, so, I think that's important. I didn't mention that. The burden
is on the government.
Is on the government to show that analogous law.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the burden of the defendant or the plaintiff, depending on the nature of the case, to show that there was no law. It's not the burden to prove a negative. It's the burden on the government to show that there is an analogous history, text, history, and tradition implicating the right, like the current law is proposing to do.
And that standard is, I think, is great. We just saw recently the tyrant out there in New Mexico. What's her name? I don't even know what her name is. The governor of New Mexico. I don't even mention her
Grisham.
Name.
Grisham, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I mention her name. She backed down from her executive order. I'm not sure what she called it, the public health order. She backed down from that, where she was going to preclude the carry of either concealed or open carry in Albuquerque, in the county that Albuquerque is in. We saw a federal district court judge that entered an injunction in that case. And subsequently, I may have misspoke. I said she withdrew it, I think, maybe, but she didn't. She's amended her order now to only focus on the prohibition with respect to playgrounds and public parks. And we'll see how that plays out. But it was easy. The federal district court, who was a judge, it was an Obama, I think, appointee, who may have had some predispositions to find gun control appropriate. Looked at the Bruin decision and said, no, it just doesn't pass muster under Bruin. And what governor, whatever her name is, in New Mexico was doing was simply she was going to likely be lose on the merits with respect to the Second Amendment challenge.
Yeah, she faced a ton of pressure to amend her order. And thankfully, a lot of the good gun rights organizations came out and filed lawsuits, Gun Owners of America, Firearms Policy Coalition, Second Amendment Foundation, and even the NRA. The NRA's kind of been late to the game a lot recently, but their filing was in state court, which I thought was good because not only did the governor in New Mexico violate the federal constitution, she also violated the constitution of the state of New Mexico.
Yeah,
which
good point.
Yes, which I think a lot of people overestimate, and I think rely too heavily on vindicating rights through the federal courts and through the federal government mechanism. But state courts and state constitutions are, I think, far more important for preserving and maintaining our rights going forward.
Yeah.
So, and we can, that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother episode.
It's that same standard that Hunter Biden is going to rely upon to try to keep, to try to win this case, you know, try to win this case. And he, there's, once again, his dad can pardon him. But if you and I were looking at this case, we'd be facing, let's see, let's add it all together, 25, if each count, if he was sentenced to the full amount under each count, he would be facing up to, looks like 25 years in prison and $750,000 in fines if the punishment ran consecutive. Mm-hmm. So,
and let's face it, I don't know what will happen with this case ultimately, but I don't think the government will be able to come up with historical analogs to support the particular provision that this case is being charged under. In 1791, is there any history of a regulation that restricts the right to keep and bear arms because somebody is a user of drugs, right? I mean, there may be some law or some regulation that existed if you were actively using drugs or if you were intoxicated, but that's different than entirely saying that you can't possess a firearm at all at any time.
I agree with you. I doubt that the government will be able to meet its burden here. And then when you can talk about the politics of it, maybe they knew that ahead of time. Yeah. That's why they brought this indictment with no other crimes. So who knows? But one thing I want to kind of correct myself a little bit. You know, I said he could go to jail under these statutes for, what did I say, 25 years. Let's face it, even if he were convicted and he wasn't pardoned, you're not going to get that sort of sentence in a case like this. It's going to be, I don't know, you know better than I do, but a couple of months in some low security federal institution, maybe, probably not even that.
Yeah. Well, there are two tiers of justice that a lot of people refer to, and I think he certainly falls into the more privileged tier of justice. So I think that any punishment that he receives, if he is convicted of any of these charges, will be relatively light.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I hope that these provisions of the Constitution are found to, or of the statute are found to be unconstitutional.
Yeah, and maybe that's how his dad gets out of pardon him. Is maybe there is a conviction in a 2-week sentence or something, or just not even that. He has to put a bracelet on his ankle or something, and Joe Biden doesn't even have to consider a pardon to the extent he is cognizant enough to consider anything.
Yeah.
Won't have to consider that.
Anything else, Mike, you want to mention before we wrap up here about the indictment? I think we've given people enough information to sort of look at this intelligently, and obviously you can form your own thoughts about it, whether you think it's a legitimate charge, and whether or not you think it's constitutional. I don't think that the statute is constitutional, but come to your own conclusions on that. What do you think, Mike? You have any parting thoughts that you'd like to mention?
No, I just, once again, I agree with you. And as much as, you know, I'm not a big Hunter Biden fan by any stretch of the imagination, I am a fan of the Constitution, and I'm a fan that it be applied the same to everybody. And I think if it is in this case, that the government's got some real problems being able to prove this, you know, get over the constitutional hurdle here.
One thing we discussed, and I'd like to get, if listeners want to provide us feedback, I'd like to hear what you think. If the 4473, so the federal form, asks you a question that's unconstitutional, do you have an obligation to tell the truth? And is it a crime not to?
And as lawyers,
and should it be a crime?
Yeah. But as lawyers, the answer is yes.
So what do you think?
Yeah. for you folks who aren't lawyers.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah. So if you haven't already, check out episode, I want to mention real quickly, check out episode 60 I just had with Jacob Hornberger on the tyranny of gun control. It's a book that he co-authored and edited. It's got a compilation of essays about the Second Amendment and about the right to keep and bear arms, and the history behind that. You mentioned earlier, Mike, that it's not about hunting. It's not. Of course, we also care about hunting, but it's got nothing to do with the Second Amendment.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say I don't like hunting. That wasn't the point.
But check it out. I think our listeners would enjoy listening to that episode as well. So again, that's episode 60, The Tyranny of Gun Control with Jacob Hornberger.
Can I say something about that? I enjoyed that because Jacob comes at the subject a little bit differently than I have historically. So I think it's good to listen. I mean, it was a great podcast, and this is a big surprise. I think you should listen to my son's podcast, but I think you would learn some things from it if you take the time to listen to it.
Yeah. He's not your typical gun industry talking head. He's the president of the Future of Freedom Foundation, which is a libertarian organization, nonprofit that puts out articles and literature on all sorts of topics, but their literature on the Second Amendment, on the right to keep and bear arms, on individual rights, I think provides a fresh perspective for people who are more in the gun world, because they're not really in the gun world per se. They're more in the liberty realm.
Yeah, he comes at it from a more of a libertarian standpoint. Yeah. Comes to the same conclusions as many of the people who aren't necessarily libertarians in the gun world come to the same conclusions, but maybe for different reasons. And I think it would be good for some folks maybe to consider whether they're really a libertarian or not in terms of their notions.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Mike. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. This episode is going to be released on Monday. As we're recording this, I will be heading out to Phoenix later this week. And by the time this episode is released, I will be back from Phoenix, and I'm going to Phoenix to the Gun Rights Policy Conference, which is an event that's put on by the Second Amendment Foundation. And there will be lots of great speakers, and I will be certainly providing our listeners some feedback about that event and what I learned while I was down there.
And I'm going to be doing jury duty next week. I got called for that, but that's not important. What is important, though, I think that the Second Amendment Foundation puts this on all weekend. And I know Paul Lathrop works his rear end off to put this all together, all the tech stuff. Now, by the time you hear this, the event will be over, but you can still watch it. I think even post, you can watch it during the event online, and you can watch it post event. And it's a who's who of Second Amendment authoritative figures. And it's worth it. I think, you know, I mean, you can listen to it on your phone while you're driving or whatever, but look them up. And
people we've talked about a lot on this show will be there speaking. Stephen Holbrook, who was a guest on this show, will be there. Masoud Ayoub will be there. John Correa from Active Self-Protection. Mark Smith from the Four Boxes Diner. Some of the best minds in the industry, legal or otherwise, will be there to speak and to talk about the current state of the right to keep and bear arms. So definitely check that out. It will be available on Facebook and on YouTube. Just check out the Second Amendment Foundation website and then also their Facebook and YouTube page for that information.
And last but not least, another reason to give to the SAF, Second Amendment Foundation, because they put this on. And if you just get there, it's free to listen. And they're doing this online for everybody out there, too.
It's free online.
To listen to. It's free online. So take advantage of that. And give to them, give to Firearms Policy Coalition, Gun Owners of America, lots of other organizations out there, because these fights, for instance, that tyrant New Mexico, that governor, she's not quit. She just got, she was handed a defeat, but she's not going to quit. And, she needs to be, continually challenged in court.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll link to the information about Gun Rights Policy Conference in the show notes as well, so that, the listeners can have easy access to that info as well. So anyway, thanks again, Mike, for joining the show. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned a little bit about what's going on with the Hunter Biden indictment. And if you liked it, don't forget to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, share it to help us spread the message of freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter at Forge of Freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.